AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Livestock futures stumbled today, but the grain markets were generally higher. And once again, both meal and bean oil found a way to push to the upside. That's got to be telling us something about demand.
Live from the Ides of April via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Pete Meyer from S&P Platts. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, let me finish up this text here real quick.
You good?
I just went on the air.
I'll play some music. We'll just play some music. Take your time.
No. It's all good. How you doing, buddy?
Doing really good.
That's great. That's great. I still could take some sun. I still could take some warmer temperatures. I think there's some of that on the way, but
okay.
Let's go. I'm ready. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You sound like a guy that's dug into his Speedo stash. Is that?
No, I'm a guy that's starting to see pictures of morels from further south. And if I don't get some morels pretty soon, mm-hmm. You people down there, listen up. I mean, 402 and a half Main Street, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Ship it.
You're asking for some morels, perhaps?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. That is Davis Michelson. And
hello.
We have got a lot of ground to cover in today's show. A quick conversation coming up with Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures, coming up here in just a moment. And then Pete Meyer, S&P Global Platts. We're going to talk some energy issues with Pete, but you guys know Pete. He spends so much time focused on production potential and what the upcoming supply might be. We got to get Pete's take on the acreage situation, the supply side cushion or lack thereof that we are dealing with, what that might mean for the marketing, how it's going to influence your marketing strategies. We've got a lot to cover with Pete coming up here in just a little bit. So Before Oliver gets here, let's go ahead and get to the closes. What you got?
Well, Chip, wheat futures found a way to reject early selling pressure and to push higher on the day. Adding support are dry conditions in the U.S. Northern Plains and the Canadian prairies, and traders once again focused on reduced supplies out of the Black Sea. Exporters have reportedly suspended purchases of cash wheat from Russia, citing uncertainty about the Russian export tax. Export sales of wheat in the weekend of April 8 featured a net cancellation of one vessel for old crop delivery. New crop sales topped 274,000 metric tons, just shy of trade expectations. July hard red winter wheat 3¾ cents higher, 615¼. July soft red jumped 5¼, 655½. September spring wheat 1¾ cents higher, 675½.
You know, and we're hearing more and more about the aggression of Russia into Ukraine. Davis, go all the way back to when we started the show, when we started Market Rally. Okay,
mm-hmm.
The Russian-Ukraine tensions. The conflict was part of the news every day.
Mm-hmm.
And every day it was supportive for wheat prices just simply because we did not know what it meant for supplies coming out of the Black Sea. Now throw on top of it some of this export tax confusion. Boy, mm-hmm. We got to pay attention to wheat here.
I remember that because I included a reference to that in my valedictorian speech when I graduated that year from grammar school.
Old crop corn
export sales in the weekend at April 8 totaled nearly 328,000 metric tons, short of trade expectations. New crop sales of almost 53,000 tons were at the low end of anticipated bookings. The strong loading pace of 1.816 million tons was well above shipments reported on Monday, which limited selling pressure. Corn traders also noted sorghum export sales of nearly 657,000 metric tons, with more than 600,000 of those sales reported to China. December corn futures posted a new contract high and a contract high close. Profit-taking pulled May corn lower after the front month contract posted a new contract high. May corn futures 4 cents lower, 590. July corn slipped 2¾, 576¾. December corn closed at 512¼. That one's up a penny today.
Market field, corn market feels like it's got some fundamental support in here, but boy, do not ignore the chart support and the momentum that has built to the upside in the new crop contracts.
Old crop bean sales of more than 90,000 metric tons fell short of trade expectations, with new crop sales of over 265,000 tons lining up with trade guesses. China accounted for all but 1,500 tons of the new crop sales. Chart watchers say back-to-back days with the low range open and the high range close in November bean futures suggest the market is once again interested in competing for any last-minute acreage switch-ups. May bean futures 8¼ cents higher, 14.18¼. July beans gained 8¾ cents, 14.11. November bean futures closed at 12.69, up a nickel on the day.
Yeah, we'll talk to Pete about it, but it feels like it's going to be difficult to move any acres over to beans at this point.
Old crop cotton sales totaled just over 122,000 running bales, with new crop sales of nearly 23,000 bales. May cotton 69 points higher at 84.89. December cotton up 46 at 83.17. Livestocks. Beef export sales of nearly 16,000 metric tons were a bit disappointing. June live cattle 40 cents lower, 119.65. October cattle dropped 47½, 123.37½. May feeders fell a buck to 144.42½. And pork export sales of 17,000 tons were a new low for the year, sending futures limit down. May lean hogs down $3, 103.57½. June hogs down $3, 104.70. I'm trying to maintain my upsettedness here, Chip. Take it one day at a time.
You're fine. You'll be okay. So will hogs. They just had a little profit taking going in there. All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Oliver Slope. We've got the profit taking going in hogs, but Oliver, 6 days in a row down in cattle. This is persistent.
Yeah, it is. And the price action overall yesterday and today was a little bit disappointing. We were hoping that we were going to see that trend line support hold a little bit better near that 120 level, and just couldn't really get that pop off that we really wanted to see. So although I've liked buying into this pullback near 120, we certainly need to see some more kind of like a springboard reaction into the weekend. With that said, looking a little bit longer term, I'm still pretty optimistic that we can continue to grind higher, but we need to get something going here shortly. If we break and close below that 117.50, those were the lows back in the middle of March, that would mark lower lows and be a little bit more concerning.
All right. There's a history of a mid-April turn in lean hog futures. But, Oliver, they took that dang serious today with a limit down close.
They did, and we'll have expanded limits 4.5 tomorrow. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some more pressure come in on the lean hogs. I believe there's still a gap open from the end of March down there near 102.5, 103 area. If we break and close below there, you could start to trigger some additional long liquidation and kind of start to snowball a little bit. Obviously, we've had a heck of a run from the beginning of the year. So, pulling back today and what we saw earlier in the week, it's probably a little bit overdue.
Yeah, it may feel like that. We'll chop around for a little bit and see how this thing takes us into the end of the week. It's always good to talk with you, Oliver. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Okay, we got a lot of big picture stuff, but I know that Pete wants to drill down into some specific markets as well. We're going to do that next. Pete Meyer, S&P Global Platts, coming up next. You might already know that POET produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know that POET uses the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate. And that means even more reliable, domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world. They are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. POET believes in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Today is one of those
just doesn't
days.
Exist for us. There's just no, it just doesn't no. exist for us.
No, today is one of those days. You know how they do mic'd up for like football games?
Yep.
And all of that stuff. Today is one of those days where it ought to be Big Apple, Joe Stackler, mic'd up during the breaks.
And really even spilling over into the segments on occasion.
Sometimes, absolutely. Yeah, that last minute. Oh, we're on the air.
Yeah. Go. Say something. Quick.
Welcome back. I'm Chip.
You're losing them.
That's Davis, and this is AgriTalk.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness gracious. Mostly plus signs in the grain markets today. Mostly negative signs in the livestock trade today with some limit down closes in lean hog futures. Pete Myers with S&P Global Platts. He joins us right now. Mr. Meyer, it is good to talk with you again. How are you?
Chip, I'm doing great. How about yourself? You know, just enjoying a rare springtime rally and enjoying the bullishness in the markets and also enjoying talking to somebody that has a half address, which is very rare for me, to be honest.
Say that last part again. You cut out on us, and I got a feeling that was the punchline. Has a half what?
I said it's very rare for me to speak with somebody that has a half in his address. So, you know, it's a beautiful
there
thing.
You go.
That's
there
right.
There you go.
By the
yeah.
way, for Dave, by the way, for Davis to say that he was talking about the last Ukraine-Russia war during his commencement speech at his grammar school graduation, that would make him
his valedictorian.
Years old.
The valedictorian,
okay, so
thank you, Pete.
Valedictorian at your grammar school. I'm a huge buyer of the over on 20 years old, my friend. That happened in 2014. Yeah.
Fantastic. By the way, Jess Rolls has got the morale hashtag trending now out there.
Fantastic.
So.
We need him.
There you go. Yeah.
We need him. Save the show.
Everyone.
Yep. How you doing, buddy? Everything okay?
Everything's good. All vaccinated, good. All ready to go.
Good. Good for you. Good for you. I'm halfway home. So
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you've been participating in the data users meeting for USDA NAS, haven't you?
Yeah. I listened to it.
To learn anything?
No, not really. I mean, the only thing that I think that our friends Lance Hodig and Chris Hawthorne at NAS understand that the quarterly stocks report turned out to be a giant circus last year. And I've been very critical of them of just the process. Mm-hmm. And they did it. They did announce that the process is going to be revamped and they're going to come out with some new procedures by September. But, you know, I mean, some of the other stuff was really of non-importance, but it is interesting to note that Lance said yesterday that, you know, they have always used a protocol that they can go back and look at the previous quarter's numbers. Now, as an analyst, I really could care less what the World Board has to say on a month-to-month basis, but I do care what the quarterly stocks numbers look like because you can base your demand over that. Now, unfortunately, what that's telling analysts like myself is that your number's not good for another 90 days.
Right.
And we saw that, right? We saw what happened in June last year, right? By September, the June number was reduced by 4%. And we all know what happened to the market after that. So, unfortunately, that left a lot of farmers out there making bad marketing decisions based on bad data. And it's just one of those things where it's unfortunate. But it's also, you know, Lance has said that the reason for the revisions in September was the fact that commercials sent late data. And he admitted today that there's really, with the exception of a few states, and I won't reel off the states, there's a handful of states where it's by law they have to submit the numbers. Basically, the commercials in a lot of these states don't have to submit their stocks numbers, or they get to it when they get to it. So,
right.
You know, it's a difficult thing. But outside of that, I didn't really learn much except that they understand that there is a problem, and they're revamping the process for the stocks reports, and they will come up with some sort of conclusions in September sometime. Regarding the upcoming year, objective yield plots, as you know, they stopped taking them out of the August crop production report a couple of years ago. They won't admit that it's budget cuts, but it was. But that's going to stay in place again this year. And as far as the number of plots, which went down dramatically 2 years ago, the number of plots are going to stay flat year over year. Of course, they blame the derecho and the drought in northwest Iowa for their very, shall we say, less than impressive performance on the yield side early in the season in August.
Can't we just call that a late season adjustment rather than a poor performance early in the season?
Okay, got it. That's fine. You can say that. That's fine.
Love it. Love it. Okay, let's get on to some of these markets. You said it. I mean, it's kind of a rare springtime rally, bringing some volatility into the market a little earlier maybe than what we normally would. The thing that has impressed me the most through the winter months and into the spring is the persistence of that rally in the bean oil market, Pete. You know, it's just bottom left, top right. There's been some hiccups here lately, but just a really, really impressive market.
Well, yeah, we've traded, you know, we've basically almost traded in a straight line from 24.5 cents to 58.25 cents. Yeah. And I mean, when you look at, you know, and it's not just in bean oil. When you look at the United Nations FAO food price index, I mean, that's continuing to rise. Veg oil set another high in March. The index is at 159.2. Now, the baseline for that, 100, would be between 2014 and 2016. But 159.2 is higher than it was in 2012. And it's also up 105% since the pandemic low in May of 2020. So you've also, that has dragged up the regular food price index. The cereal index is down a little bit. Sugar index is down a little bit as well. But when, you know, when I listened to Chairman Powell talk about, you know, thinking that they have inflation under control, you know, this is one of those things on the food side where it's very difficult for me to believe that they have inflation under control. And he did mention on 60 Minutes this week that 2% is kind of their benchmark, but they got 2% in this week's data. But as far as inflation is concerned, but he says it has to be sustained. And you know what? I mean, the oil market is such a big part of the inflation that maybe it stays below. But geez, anybody who's been out there buying meat or buying food of late or buying anything from lumber to ammunition. There's quite a bit of inflationary pressure. I mean, lumber has tripled in price. Ammo, you can't even get. But back to the story at hand, this veg oil index is something we watch very, very closely because of the amount of interest from our clients in biodiesel and renewable diesel, which
sure.
I won't get into the clarification, but those are two different diesel products.
Yeah. And the demand for that, for biodiesel, I'm just going to call it, I'm going to get generic on you and call it biodiesel. The demand for that biodiesel, it just continues to push up, and it's consumer driven, isn't it, Pete?
Well, it's driven by the oil companies, right? You have this LCFS, low carbon intensity credits that they can get. You have states like California that are pushing for this. Now, soy oil and vegetable oils in general are not the feedstock of choice. The feedstock of choice would be fats and tallows. And a year ago, I knew nothing about it, but unfortunately now I've become a little bit of a geek about it. But the fact of the matter is, Chip, when you look at these bio-renewable diesel plants that have been announced here over the last 6 months, if only two-thirds of them opened, they would require something in the neighborhood of 10 billion pounds of feedstock to be running. Well, when you look at grease, fats, and tallow production, and you bring that all together, it's only 12 billion pounds. So they're going to have to go somewhere. Now, the grease production, which is probably the lowest of the two, around 4, maybe 3.7 billion pounds. That includes UCO, which is used cooking oil. These are all the inputs that these guys want because they get higher credits for it. The tallows, you know, the fats, the tallows, inedible, edible, technical tallow, that's around 8 billion pounds. So, you know, yeah, I, you know, we are of the opinion that there just is not enough feedstock for these announced plants, and that a lot of the plants are being announced just because their competitors are doing so. So it's going to take a while to shake out, but there certainly is some nervousness in the vegetable oil market, whether it be palm, canola, right, rapeseed, if you like, or yep, soybean oil. And the fact of the matter, too, Chip, is that all these input prices, whether it be fats or tallows or used cooking oil, whatever, they're all gravitating towards the soybean oil price, because the soybean oil price is probably your most transparent price to the marketplace.
Okay.
So, yeah, soybean oil is going to be the leader, and you know, but as you know, in this country, I mean, we crush for meal. We don't crush for oil. So this is going to be a totally different mindset. And it's become such a big deal. The USDA has announced, or the World Board announced, that they're going to break down renewable diesel and biodiesel out of the industrial component for the May report.
Starting in the May supply and demand report. That's exactly right. Good stuff, Pete. Hey, when we come back, let's talk about the supply side of the market for the 2021 crops. Do you like the acreage numbers? Do you not like them? Where do you see things moving from here? What kind of an impact is that going to have on your balance sheets going into the 2021-22 marketing year?
Farming in the 21st century requires data-driven technology and product decisions that are rooted in on-the-ground insights. At Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side to help you grow yields and profits. Simplot is a pioneer and innovator in plant nutrition and agronomic science. Our local experts offer grounded advice to help you get the most out of every acre. Go to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com to see how we can be your one-stop resource. Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with.
It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Consultancy soft wheat export forecast for the EU plus Britain edges higher. Powell again says interest rate hikes are unlikely before 2024. NAS to undertake major review of the quarterly grain stocks report. We just got a report on that from Pete Meyer. Vilsack confronts several issues during a House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee hearing. The Ag Secretary comments on possible major tax changes for farmers. U.S. Climate Envoy John Kerry is in Shanghai today. We'll see what kind of fallout we get from that. JBS plans to upgrade and expand several processing facilities. South Africa hit by bird flu and choice beef prices turned back to the upside. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and we are talking to Pete Meyer from S&P Global Platt. Before we get back to Pete, Davis, go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July HRW wheat was 3¾ cents higher, 615¼. September spring wheat, 1¾ cents higher, 675½. May corn futures, 4 cents lower, 590. December corn closed at 512¼, up a penny today. May soybean futures, 8¼ cents higher, 1418¼. November bean futures closed at 1269, up a nickel today. May cotton, 69 points higher, 84.89. June live cattle, 40 cents lower, 119.65. May feeders fell a buck to 144.42½. Oh, yeah. May lean hogs. Like, could you have gone down any more? Chip, they went down so much that they can't actually go down anymore in a single day. Down the $3 daily limit, 103.57½ at the close. Now back to you.
Okay, just so you're aware, tomorrow there's expanded limits for hogs.
Oh, so great. So imagine my disappointment tomorrow. You're not going to want to not tune in, America, to see whether or not I'm $4.50 worth of disappointed tomorrow in the lean hog market. You're not going to want to miss that.
Right. Thanks, Davis.
Pete Meyer, I don't even have music for that level of disappointment.
is our guest today. Pete, I was looking back at
something.
Go ahead.
There's nothing worse than a disappointed 19-year-old.
David, that's right.
There you go. It's not his fault.
You could disillusion me for life in a single limit down day, you know? And nobody wants that. I'm still developing, Pete.
Put your big boy pants on. Let's go.
I don't have any yet. I just graduated grammar school.
I don't have any yet.
Clearly. Where's Ukraine on the map?
Hey.
Okay, here we go.
You know, you better quit giving him a hard time about this, or somebody's going to be thinking that maybe, you know, like, Pete, you old curmudgeon, what's going on?
Nothing.
I'm just glad somebody was paying attention while I was talking. That's the thing. It's every newsman's dream for people to pay attention when he says something.
Again, I'm just happy to be talking to somebody at 402 and a half Main Street. That's all.
Hey, if you're sending morels in that direction, I'm there. All right.
Negative on the morels.
Hey, okay, so we talked about renewables and diesel and everything. I can't let you get away without talking about ethanol. Is there some margin in the business? Is there what's your overall take?
Oh, well, there is some margin in the business, but you know, I mean, the numbers just aren't very exciting, and they're not very exciting for us because we just don't have much excitement on the oil market. You know, back in February we said we thought that oil was worth about $60. And it would gravitate towards that price, and we traded up to 60, and then up to 67, then down to 57, then back to 60. Now it's 63. Look, ethanol prices would be driven by corn, but you know, I think that there is a certain optimism here that everybody's going to get cabin fever and hit the roads, and we've certainly seen a lot of optimism from the airlines on. Granted, that's not ethanol related, but on oil demand, given the amount of flights that they're increasing all the time. So I would just have a wait and see attitude. I mean, we're still having trouble getting over we're 900 every week on the production side, or we can't get over that million. I mean, I'd like to see that number a little bit higher, but
I know it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I keep waiting for that 4-digit on the barrels per day on the production side. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Hey, I like the way that we're pulling our stocks down. The last week, the place where we saw the stocks increase were on the coast, which, you know, suggests to me that they're gearing up for some driving or some exports, one of the two. So who knows? We could see that change too.
I mean, this is a normal time of year for them to be getting ready for Memorial Day. The question is, will we be back to some sort of normalcy by the time we get to Memorial Day? That's really the question. And I think, Chip, you know me long enough. I'm very conservative by nature in my analysis and whatever. I don't try to make any headlines. So we're just going to try to wait and see what happens here. And like I said, our overall view of the crude market or the oil market in general is that $60 is a good price at the moment.
Gotcha. Okay. What do you make of the relationship between new crop corn and new crop bean prices right now? Have beans just kind of decided, you know what, it is what it is, and we're going to go forward with the acres we got?
I think so, but I also think that, you know, what we've seen here the last few weeks are these massive jumps in the Brazilian crop. And, you know, I stayed at 132, 133 the whole time. Sure, guys were down at 125 early in the year. I talked to our guys in Brazil. They're like, no, Pete, we're good. Okay, now we're at 135, 136. I saw some estimates for 140. Now, I don't get to 140 till next year. So I do have a 140 million metric ton production for Brazil next year. But, you know, I stayed at 130 because I was worried about this. All these rains in Mato Grosso and some of these other places, you know, the big states. And I had a long conversation with our guys in Brazil. We have a big team in Brazil, and they're like, Pete, here's what we're hearing. The smaller states out-yielded the bigger states. So this could be a 135, 136 crop. They don't have much confidence in anything above that. That's not saying it couldn't get there. But they're thinking that the USDA might be on the right track. So, okay, so now I'm up to 135, 136. Is the soybean market saying – yeah, I don't know. Are we gonna deal with these acres? Now, look, we could talk about the acres. I mean, 87.6, I don't think is a good number, but I don't see that number going to 89 either. I mean, if you look at combined corn and soybean you know, changes from prospective plantings to final.
Right.
Last year we had a huge number, right? 6.5 million acres in corn, but it averages between 2 and 3. So yeah. For me as an analyst, I try to put my objective hat on and say, okay, maybe we'll add 2.5 million acres. Okay. Maybe I'll add eight or 900,000 to my bean number and get to 88.5, which is my number going into June. Okay. Let's look at the market. Yep. Corn way outperforming. The ratio's below 2.5. Let me move my corn number up 1.4 million acres. Now I have a difference here of 2.3 million. Historically, I'm in the game, but my balance sheet still doesn't really look that good.
Right. Well, when you say it doesn't look that good, you're still looking at fairly tight supplies, right?
Right. So let's start at corn. I have 92.5 planted, 84.8 harvested. I'm always conservative on my yield. I start at 178.5. I have basically flat demand to the February outlook form at 15,125. Now, that's going to be about 350 above old crop that was in April. My carryout's 1.4. Your old crop carryout was 1.35. That's stability.
Yeah.
So, you know, but now you have to wonder, are we too high priced at 6 or whatever? Anyway, over to beans, you know.
Wait a second. Why are you working with a 178? It seems high to me.
No, the yield, the trend is 180.5. USDA is going to work at USDA is going to work at 179.5. Why would I not?
Well, record yield is 176.4.
Okay.
I'm just saying, you know, if we're going to, we've got a trend line that's projecting above the record yield.
Yeah. The trend line has basically been linear for how many years now? So, I mean, I'm surprised that the USDA came in at 179.5. I think that's kind of a hint that, you know, the trend line would be 180.5. Now, granted, 178.5 for me is based on good weather. So
okay.
I don't see anything in the genetics. I mean, I was surprised the USDA came in at 179.5 at the outlook form. I would thought for sure because they followed trend line for many, many years. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
over to beans. You know. What's the balance sheet look like there?
Over to beans, 88.5 planted. My yield's just right around there, 50.8, whatever. I have a 130 carryout. That's it. 130.
Yeah.
And if we look at where we think that they'll be in May, because they're going to use those prospective plantings number, I would expect that the USDA comes out in May in new crop with a 1.3 corn carryout, and I don't think they're going to go below 100, so I'll give them the benefit of doubt and say they'll come in at 110. So what this says to me is that, you know, the bean problem, and I think everybody knows that, is more than a one-year problem. If we get 93, 93.5, 94 million acres planted of corn, which for me to be a stretch, you know, then you have a little bit of leeway, but it's still going to squeeze your soybeans are going to be tight here for a couple of years.
Right. Yeah, and I think for a lot of guys, that's one of the reasons that they are as optimistic looking forward as they are on the producer side, Pete, about profits and being able to put some money in the bank over the next couple of years is that tight soybean supply situation.
Right, but as we both know as well, I mean, you know, the corn is kind of outrun beans here, so they're probably going to plant a little bit more corn, I would think, but I don't know if there's that much room in it. I mean, I hate the prospective plantings report. NAS hates the prospective plantings report.
Yeah.
It's the most useless thing that's ever been done. And yeah, when you have a 2 to 3 million mean variance, it's awful.
Well, and when you look at how the private guys are doing, I mean, Allendale, Pro Farmer, Farm Futures, there's a list of guys that are out there doing their own surveys. If you would throw them together, you know, the average of the private stuff is really pretty good. I mean, it's one of those areas that if they're looking for some cost savings, prospective plantings might be one of those spots. Pete, it's always fun to talk with you, buddy. Thank you so much, man.
Take care of yourself, Chip.
You bet. That's Pete Meyer, S&P Global Platts. Davis and I will be back to wrap up today's second hour of AgriTalk here in just a moment.
You suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
So did you spend the last break doing the same thing that I did?
I was actually rearranging my umbrellas by color rather than by size. Is that what you were doing?
What? See? What a coincidence. I was doing exactly the same thing.
I had a funny feeling.
No, that's not what I was doing. I was trying to figure out the difference between renewable diesel and biodiesel.
Okay.
Did you do any of that?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, yes, you did. I know you did. Okay. High-quality renewable diesel, also known as hydro-treated vegetable oil or HVO, and traditional biodiesel, also known as fatty acid methyl ester, are often confused.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a process HVO of transesterification. It's transesterification that differentiates the two, obviously. You had to research that?
Right. So what is that transesterification?
Well, it's a process where you exchange the organic group of an ester with the organic group of an alcohol.
Okay. And somehow, some way, it makes them similar, but they can be used in the same way, but they're two different fuels.
That's right. Yes.
This is all very unclear to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it has something to do with the purity by which it burns.
Okay. Both are made from organic biomasses. The difference is...
I suppose there's any chance there are any scientists who listen to the show, are there?
Yeah. Yeah, the difference is...
would be great.
Or the difference is in the production process, cleanliness, and quality.
There you go.
Yeah. It's all interesting. And you know, Pete started off talking about that. And we've talked about it a couple of... Pete Meyer, S&P Global Platts. We've talked about the impact of... we've just been calling it biodiesel, but biodiesel on the global veg oil markets. And when you start limiting the feedstocks or using more of the feedstocks and taking away from that food market, it does start to have that ripple effect, and the ripples become bigger instead of smaller as they move out away from the center. And it turns into a 105% rally from the pandemic low in veg oil futures.
Yeah.
Or in soybean oil futures. You know, you double the price from the pandemic low. That's absolutely incredible in this kind of an environment.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't even want to bring up the food for fuel thing. I thought we had put a nail in that coffin. Decades ago.
You know what? If we just keep producing, we can get through that and pass that. And one of the things to keep in mind here is I've always said, when you look at soybean oil and you look at palm oil, the healthier of the two is by far soybean oil, by far. Why aren't we just taking palm oil and making diesel and pushing the veg oil out into all the food markets out there? You remove one from the food market and replace it with bean oil. And I've thrown that idea out to others before, and the answer is it's always better to just let the market make that decision. And I got to respect that. I'm a markets guy first and foremost, and the market is going to decide what feedstock is going to be used at different times to supply that energy market.
So, is it a question of stability with the Malaysian palm oil supply? I have no idea. I'm spitballing.
It might be. It might be. You know, the lifetime productive capabilities of some of those plantations, were, for the most part, the number that I've always heard is 30 years. But after you get past 20, it starts to go down, and it takes a while to ramp up to the peak. So every year is not the same inside of that 30 years, but a tree is going to have about 30 years of productivity in it.
So, does it take a year where we wind up with a 130, a 120, a 110 bean carry out to answer some of these questions in real world application?
Oh, you know, that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it might take. That is exactly what it might take. And I keep going back to the unbelievably popular heating oil program that we've talked with Greg Anderson from farmer from Nebraska. Mm-hmm. We've talked with him about it a couple of times. He's on the National Biodiesel Board. But consumers in the Northeast, where heating oil is still used on a regular basis, once they learn about the environmental benefits of burning that bio-based heating oil,
sure,
at a 20%, a 40% blend. I mean, when they got used to the 20% blend and found how it works, you know, mm-hmm. number one, it works. It keeps their house warm. Number two, it's reducing their GHG output. They sure. wanted an even higher blend. They got a 40%. They want an even higher blend.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of a success story that bleeds over to the biodiesel market for transportation. And it kind of feels like here we go again in another wave of the markets realizing just how beneficial the biodiesel might be going forward. Okay, National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for April 21st through the 25th. We've got below normal temperatures across the Corn Belt. We've got below normal precipitation expected over most of the Corn Belt. The exception is far southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and Ohio. Otherwise, we're looking at normal precip there, below normal precipitation, all other areas in the Corn Belt. The 8 to 14 day, April 23rd through the 29th, we've got below normal temperatures expected in Minnesota, eastern Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan. Other areas of the Corn Belt are looking at normal to above normal temperatures. So we've got some progress there. Below normal precipitation in the west, above normal in the east. Come back tomorrow morning. We got a free-for-all. Wiesmeyer, Haney, and GT Thompson.